Hello, everyone. Hi, Jack. I came in a little bit early so that I could hear you because the times that I've gotten to hear you, I really enjoyed. And the funny thing is, I couldn't hear you. You were another person that, at least for my computer, was too low, so that even when my speakers were turned up all the way, I couldn't hear you. I had that problem with Ron also. It's kind of funny how that volume thing works, but I did want to hear you, Jack, but I couldn't. But I sat here with you anyway. And I appreciate that you recorded, Jack, but I almost never go back and listen to recordings, occasionally, but even when I say I'm going to, I don't. One reason for that, just so you know, is that I'm more of a, you know how there's different types of learners. I'm the type that likes to read. I will spend a lot more time with a book than I will an audio recording. So even though I record and I post my recordings because I know that people really enjoy them, the truth is that's not my personal style to sit and listen to a recording. I read. That's what I do. So, but I thought that coming in, you write a book. But I thought that coming in would be nice, and it just didn't work out. So I'm just laughing at that. But I still sat here with you. So hey everyone, I'm here as you know for the teachings of Inner Ramana. I had been teaching from this book before I went to India, and the last message that we had looked at was a message called, let me see if the name of it here. How to Awaken from the Dream. And what How to Awaken from the Dream was about was looking at our expectations and imagination. Most specifically, looking at our expectations and imagination regarding awakening or regarding enlightenment and letting those go. What Inner Ramana says is that from the unawakened mind, it is impossible to know what awakening or enlightenment is. It is impossible to judge what an awakened or enlightened being might do. In fact, it reminds me of a story I heard. I don't remember the whole story. I remember one line from the story. So I'm not going to tell you a story here. But I remember there was something happening in a story between Krishna and Arjuna. Actually, I do remember the story. I do remember the story, but it's not important, but it did come to my mind just now. Arjuna is watching Krishna's decisions and actions in a particular story, and they don't make sense to Arjuna. And for those of you who don't know, Krishna would be the godlike being, and Arjuna would be the devotee. So Arjuna is watching Krishna, and he doesn't understand why Krishna is making the decisions he's making, doing what he's doing. It makes no sense at all. And so finally, Arjuna just gets completely frustrated and he says to Krishna, that he just doesn't understand. And Krishna says to him, "You cannot understand me." And that's basically the gist of what our last message was about. That for us, from a state of, not having an awakened mind, to be making judgments about what is or isn't enlightenment, what is or isn't awakening, is foolish. What we're going to do tonight is we're going to start on another message. This message is called How to Awaken from the Dream, Part 2. If you happen to have the book, The Teachings of Inner Ramana, you're going to find this on page 61. And what I would like to do before we begin this teaching is just take a moment of silence. So if y'all would join me, I'd appreciate that. Amen. I know I sound a little funny. Some of you heard me this morning, so you're used to that. But those of you who don't know, I have a cold. Picked it up in India along with all of my friends. All of my friends picked up a cold too. Today, though, I am happy to report, was the first day that I was able to breathe through my nose, even though I still sound funny. I've been able to breathe through my nose at least somewhat without any medication. Up until today, it would become completely blocked. The only way to not have my mouth hanging open all the time was to take medication. Yawina, I see you're saying you're new to Pal Talk. Yes, you should be hearing something. Will somebody please tell Yawina that she should be hearing? That's a very cool name, by the way. But I don't think she hears me. So if somebody could type in and communicate with her through typing, I'd appreciate it. Let her know maybe she needs to leave the room, come back. Yeah, do that kind of coaching with Yawina. That would be really nice. Today is also the first day that I have been able to stay up all day without taking a nap. So I'm real excited about that. And it's also the first day I've been able to eat a meal without becoming nauseous. So I think that that means that I am on my way to recovery. It's funny because before I went to India, I intuitively knew I would need time to rest when I got back. So I said I was taking, even though I'd be back for the last week of November, I was taking the entire month of November off, and I wouldn't return to Pal Talk until December 1. And it's just kind of funny that December 1 should be the first day that I really felt somewhat okay physically. And so I picked the right day to come back. But yeah, everyone got sick on the trip, Jay. It wasn't just me. I also came back with bed bug bites. I did not come back with lice, which was a possibility because the children we worked with had lice. So I got the cold, and I got the bed bugs, but I did not get the lice. So 2 out of 3, I'm doing pretty good. and happy, you know. Did I take the bed bugs with me? Not that I know of. What I did when I came home, because I knew I had bed bug bites. So what I did when I came home, first thing is I took everything out of my suitcase, put it in the laundry room, and I washed everything, whether I'd worn it or not, in hot water and in the dryer, because that's what they recommend that you do. And I did that right away. Usually when I get back, I actually procrastinate a few days on the unpacking job because I'm resting. But I didn't procrastinate at all. I did that right away. And the bed bug bites I had have healed. And there have been no new ones. So I assume that means I did not bring them home, because otherwise I'm sure I would know it by now. So, but yeah, lots of interesting things. You know, some of the stuff when you talk about what happens in India, you know, if you haven't been there, if you talk about the, well, I put the suitcase in a place where, you know, the suitcase is basically in an outside storage unit in the cold. So it's not near any beds or near any furniture or anything like that. And it's been over a week now. So I think I really do think we're okay. but what I was going to say is, you know, when you go to India, there's all kinds of things I can tell you about India that really sound awful. This morning, if you were at the social time after our Awakening Together gathering, I talked about the animals crossing the road, specifically in Chennai, where the traffic is very, very heavy, and how they don't always make it, and that I saw several dogs and one calf with broken legs. I also talked about, you know, when I've told you about the bed bugs. I'm not certain where I got the bed bugs, Jay. It's actually even possible that I got the bed bugs on the flight from Chennai to Frankfurt, on the airplane, because I did not notice the bed bug bites until I got to Frankfurt. So, you know, they didn't show up any earlier than that. I also took a nap prior to our flight in a different bed than any bed that I had slept in while I was staying there. And it's possible that that last bed that that I just took a nap in was the one with the bed bugs. So I don't know where the bed bugs came from, but I didn't have them the whole time I was there. They only showed up at the very, very end while traveling home. But again, you know, I can talk about, again, the possibility of getting lice. You can talk about the trash that's everywhere, the poop that's everywhere, the possibility of yourself getting sick by eating the food. You know, you can just tell all kinds of stories about things that sound bad to maybe a Western mind. But most people who go to India on pilgrimage will tell you that, you know, it's just not that way. I don't know how to explain it, but even though there's all of these things that you would think the Western mind would judge as bad and you would think the Western mind would be repulsed by, there's some kind of a flow that you get into where you, at least most of us, we find ourselves in automatic acceptance of all that is. You know, I've had all kinds of experiences in India. The trip before this one, the building I was staying in had no water for 24 hours. The water just completely quit. And I had to walk about a block to a public water spigot to fill up water, to get water in a bucket. And when I got the water was completely green. And so it wasn't anything that I wanted to wash in or anything. The only thing I was willing to do with it was put it in the toilet so that I could at least flush the toilet and use the toilet. I put it, so, you know, all kinds of stories that sound like horrible things, and somehow they're not. They're not. At least they haven't been in my experience, and they haven't been in the experience of the people that I have traveled with. So it's really actually a very beautiful experience traveling to India. And at this point right now, I don't know for sure if I'll ever go back again. I have no guidance right now. But you know, if you get the chance to go, please don't be afraid to go because of my stories about bed bugs and hurt animals and trash and poop and lice and no water. And don't let those things scare you away, because really, they're not a problem. And you'll see that when you get there. All right, so how to awaken from the dream, part two. Again, page 61. Today I want to tell you how to awaken from the dream. It isn't a mystery, and anyone can awaken when he is ready. He simply will not awaken until then, but his time dreaming can be spent preparing himself to be ready. This is the purpose of devotion. Devotion is willingly awakening to what has always been true by leaving everything else behind. Devotion is willingly awakening to what has always been true by leaving everything else behind. You know, I don't know anything, except I do know my nose is starting to get more stopped up right now, but that's probably because it's turning evening and the air is getting cooler. So if I happen to see a Danielle or anybody walk by, I might send them to get me some medication. There she is. I knew you'd hear me. If you go up in the bathroom in my second drawer where we keep the medication, uh-huh. Can you get my nose spray? Uh-huh. If it's not there, it'll be next to the bed. Okay. Thank you. She's always nearby somewhere. You know, one thing that at least it appears to me to be true. I don't know it for a fact, so I don't want to sound like I know it for a fact. But it appears to me that awakening is not something we can make happen. We can't practice enough that we awaken. I don't think we can even forgive enough or let go enough that we awaken. It seems that awakening comes by grace. And sometimes it comes by grace to people who haven't, thank you, Danielle, mm-hmm. who haven't apparently done anything on a spiritual path, you know. It just comes. Byron Katie is an example of that. Even Ramana Maharshi is an example of that. And then sometimes it seems to come to people who have been on the path for a long time and have done a lot of practice, and then it comes. You know, like Jan Fraser was on the path for 20 years. Adyashanti, I don't know how long, but he was on the path for a while before his awakening came. Bentino Massara was on the path for a while before his awakening came. Okay, pardon me. I'm going to take this medication. Hold on one second. Okay, hold on. Taking care of myself here. Are y'all enjoying the sound? Danielle's enjoying this. That's good. I like to make her laugh. Okay, so let's see. Jay McCormick asked a question, which I would like to respond to. His question says, so what are our practices? Well, the way I feel from my own experience, what I have seen Adyashanti say in one of his books or videos, what I think I just read here from the teachings of Inner Ramana, is that if we have the calling to do so, the calling to the spiritual path, the calling to spiritual practice, what the practice is doing is it's preparing the way for awakening. And the interesting thing is, if we have that calling, there are certainly a number of people who do not appear to have an interest in a spiritual path. And again, some of those people will spontaneously awaken anyway. I used to be jealous of those people. I'm not anymore, because now I accept that the way this is unfolding for me is the way it's meant to unfold, not only for me, but for all of us. I actually trust that everything is absolutely perfect. So I no longer think it's unfair when somebody has a spontaneous awakening without the practice. Also, one thing that I have learned from my own experience is, let's assume I'm going to live this entire lifetime and I'm not going to wake up. And of course, I don't know whether that's true or not, but let's just go with that story for a moment. I live to be 92, and I go to my deathbed without awakening. Have I lost anything? My answer is a great big fat no, not a thing. Because what my spiritual practice has brought for me is an inner peace and a clarity that I lived without before. And even if I live for many, many years without awakening, I would much rather live those years with this inner peace and that clarity than with the stress and the confusion and the self-hatred and all of that that was there before. So what the practice does is the practice teaches us to live in our right mind instead of living in our wrong mind. Living in the right mind is a joyous experience. In A Course in Miracles, that living in the right mind is called the happy dream. Notice the word dream is still there. That's because it's not yet awakening to reality. But a happy dream is a hell of a lot better than a bad dream, right? So practice has a purpose. Practice is useful. And if you're called to it, you might as well enjoy it. You know, why not enjoy whatever's in front of you? I mean, why choose anything but enjoyment? So, today I want to tell you how to awaken from the dream. It isn't a mystery, and anyone can awaken when he is ready. He simply will not awaken until then, but his time dreaming can be spent preparing himself to be ready. This is the purpose of devotion. Devotion is willingly awakening to what has always been true by leaving everything else behind. Devotion is a slow process. I do not mean to say it will take many, many lifetimes to wake up through devotion. I mean to say that devotion is a slow process now, in every moment. It slows time by slowing the mind. And with practice, experience becomes richer. You might liken it to enjoying a full-flavored meal more when each bite is taken slowly and held in the mouth while you enjoy the richness of its flavor. This is how life becomes when the busyness of the mind is absent and does not interfere. So certainly, I'm guessing that we have all eaten a meal while engaged in thought about something else and really didn't even notice what we've eaten, you know. So he's saying devotion is like eating the meal and being aware of every bite, you know, really enjoying maybe the colors, the richness, the smell, the taste. It's about not missing that experience. Devotion is about not missing our love for the awakening process. Devotion is about not missing our love for the awakening process. Again, if you are here, why not be happy here? Why say that you have to get somewhere else before you can be happy? When I was a young woman and I dreamed of catching a man and getting married, which, by the way, I never did, never succeeded at that one. But when I was a young woman, you know, 20 or so, and I used to dream of that, I read this book. I don't remember the name of it, but it was a book about, you know, how to catch a man and get him to fall in love with you and marry you. And one thing it talked about in that book was it said that men are attracted to happy women. And it said that the problem with a lot of women is they keep putting off happiness. They say, I will be happy when I lose 10 pounds, or I will be happy when I have a baby, or I will be happy when we buy a house. And, you know, there's always a next goal, and they're not happy, and that this is a turnoff to men. Well, you know, I don't remember anything else that was in that book that I read when I was 20. Maybe that's why no man ever fell in love with me. I forgot the rest of the book. But I remember that. That stuck with me. Why put off happiness? Why say, I will be happy when? Why say, I'll be happy when I wake up, even? Why not be happy right here, right now? It's kind of like the experience of India I was telling you about. Even though there's a lot of things in India that sound bad when you talk about them, for some reason, at least for most of us, something kind of takes over where we're happy. So we're happy with the trash. We're happy with the traffic. We're happy with everything that we come across, right? It's somehow it just happens there. I'm not sure why. Then we come back to our regular lives and maybe we start judging again. You know, maybe we start saying, well, I can be happy when, you know, this thing here in the house gets fixed. I can be happy when my partner starts, you know, changes and starts doing this. And we put off that happiness again that we allowed while we were on the pilgrimage. Devotion is choosing to be happy right now with the awakening process. Choosing to love the process of awakening. So going on to the next paragraph. The mantra will help to slow the mind and pull focus inward, which is devotion. This is because the heart is within, but the mind is without. When one is focused on the heart, one sees all things from within. One enjoys all experiences from a point of certainty that is within. But when one is focused on the mind, one is focused without. Without is a delusion of chaos made by staying without and refusing to live from within. So as you see, you do have a choice. Now, the mind here is really synonymous with judgment. And the heart here is synonymous with acceptance or beingness. So if I choose to live in judgment, I am not going to be happy. And it doesn't matter what's going on around me. I have a story about my dad that I told a few years ago. I haven't told it recently, but it's kind of a funny story. Forgive me, Dad, for talking about you behind your back. But, you know, my dad is a pretty lucky guy. My dad has his health. His wife has her health. All of their children have their health. All of their grandchildren have their health, right? Nobody has cancer. Nothing like that's going on in our family at this time. Doesn't mean it won't someday, but it's not now. And it hasn't until this time. We have healthy family members. They die in their late 90s. My dad has a very good retirement. He has plenty of money. If they, you know, get it in their mind, they want to take a $20,000 trip, they take a $20,000 trip. You know, they have no financial worries. At the level of form, they have nothing to worry about. They really have it all. Well, my dad came to visit me when I lived in North Carolina, and the house there had these huge bushes out front. And I made a comment to him how the bushes were so tall that it was very, very difficult for me to cut them. And, of course, I had those hand clipper things. And my dad thought, well, he could make that easier on me. He could just buy me some electric clippers, and that would be a lot easier on me. And so he went to the store, and he bought some electric clippers, and he gave me the electric clippers, and I thought that was wonderful, you know. Well, the next morning, my dad got up, you know, I said, "Hey, Dad, how you doing?" And he said, "Not good." I said, "Why not?" And he said, "I was up all night worrying." And I said, "About what?" And he said, "I think I bought you the wrong clippers." And I just thought that was the funniest thing in the world, because what that proved to me is that if we are not ready for happiness, even if there's nothing in our life that we can truly complain about, the mind will still find something to judge and be unhappy about. And on this particular day, it was, you know, did he buy the wrong clippers? Because, you know, when you go to Lowe's or Home Depot, there's several to choose from. Yeah, it's always something, Gilda Radner. So what Inner Ramana is telling us is that if we choose to live in judgment, we will be unhappy. But if we choose to live in acceptance and beingness, we will be happy. He's not telling us that we have to in some way become perfect. He's not telling us that we will be happy when we learn to never make a mistake, when we learn to never get angry, when we learn to, not even never get judgmental. Because you know what can happen if you slip into judgment, if you accept that, you're right back into happiness. He's not telling us that we have to get to a certain point on this spiritual path and master a certain number of skills on this spiritual path in order to be happy. He's telling us that wherever we are right now, we can be happy by staying in the heart, by staying in acceptance and beingness instead of moving into judgment. So really, if you pay close attention to yourself, and of course it's always up to you whether you want to pay close attention to yourself or not, but if you want to, start noticing the unhappiness that was there, whether it's little or large, the unhappiness that is there whenever you are judging anything. And start noticing the happiness that is there when you're just leaning back in acceptance and being. And you'll see the truth of this message. And you know, A Course in Miracles says that Holy Spirit teaches through contrast. Well, contrast means that we're watching and we're noticing the difference between. And because we're not fools, we're actually wisdom itself. When we watch and we notice the difference between, we will come to choose the wiser option. The one that makes us happy is the wiser option. So, you know, if I start paying attention to myself and I start noticing that when I'm judging my husband for dot, 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 I'm unhappy. And I notice when I'm judging my own cooking, the way I cooked that, I'm unhappy. And when I notice I'm judging what's happening on the news, I'm unhappy. But then when I start noticing when I'm in acceptance of my puppy pooping on the floor, I'm still happy. When I'm in acceptance of my grandchildren crying all night long, I'm still happy. Right? I'm going to start noticing it's not really the event, because I know I could be unhappy with my puppy pooping on the floor. I know I could be unhappy with my children crying all night long. The difference is I have chosen to accept some situations, and I have chosen to judge others. And when I choose to be in judgment, I'm unhappy. When I choose to be in acceptance, I am happy. And when I see this very, very clearly, because I've been willing to watch myself and learn from myself, what will happen is that my wisdom will just start naturally choosing acceptance more and more. I'll literally lose interest in judgment because it doesn't serve me. It has no reasonable purpose. All right, so let's go back to this message. The mantra will help you to slow the mind and pull focus inward, which is devotion. This is because the heart is within, but the mind is without. When one is focused on the heart, one sees all things from within. One enjoys all experiences from a point of certainty that is within. But when one is focused on the mind, one is focused without. Without is a delusion of chaos made by staying without and refusing to live from within. So as you see, you do have a choice. When one focuses within through devotion, life quiets. This happens because one is no longer entangled in the mesh of chaos without. And if one is no longer entangled in the mesh of chaos without, one is no longer a part of it. And so he is free from chaos, and the confusing cries of chaos die for him. Now, the interesting thing about this is this doesn't say that the form of chaos will disappear. I think sometimes people have that expectation that, you know, if I let go of my mental errors, and judgment would be one of our mental mistakes, if I let go of my mental errors, then the outside form will always be in a certain way. But that's not what this paragraph is saying. This paragraph is saying that we will be no longer entangled in the mesh of chaos without, that we will be no longer a part of it, that we will be free of it, right? So the chaos will continue for anyone else who's still living from judgment. But we're in acceptance of it. You know, we're not fighting what is. You know, it reminds me of Byron Katie, right? Loving what is. We aren't fighting what is. We're in acceptance of what is, and so we are at peace. The outer world does not need to change for us, right? We let it be as it is. Inner Ramana continues, I am telling you how to wake up from the dream, and that is to choose to live your life from within. When one lives from within, he is no longer a part of the dream, and so it dies for him, and he awakens. Now, here I had a question. Would you please speak to us about the experience of living from within part-time while also being pulled back into the dream? Or another way to word that would be pulled back into the mind or pulled back into judgment. You know, so what's that like when we're able to do it part of the time but not all of the time? The answer, well, this will not work. One cannot get out of a pool of water and then get in again without once again getting wet. If he wants to stay dry and know the warmth of the sun on his dry skin as his only condition, he must choose to stay out of the pool. So choose to stay out of judgment. Choose to stay in acceptance. Choose to stay in the heart. Choose to stay inward focused. My comment to that was, but this is very hard for us. The inner teacher's answer was, that is only because you are not fully ready not to get wet. So in other words, if I am still spending part of my time in judgment, it's because I still believe there's some value in that. I have not yet looked enough, observed enough, or seen enough that the only thing that's really accomplished by staying in judgment is that to one degree or another, I suffer upset. I haven't learned that yet. And in fact, the real reason we judge is, crazy as this sounds, the real reason we judge is we think that our judgment will bring us happiness. That's why we judge. And the exact opposite is true. So until we release that belief that judgment will bring me happiness, and we come to see that all judgment does is create my own upset, we are still going to step out into judgment because we want it. So we have to wise up. We really do. We have to wise up to the fact that judgment never brings me happiness. As long as I think it does, I'm going to keep going back into it, at least part-time, right? Because I'll keep going after what I think is going to make me happy. Because after all, the truth is, what we're all after all of the time is happiness. No one seeks suffering. Everyone seeks happiness. It's just that we don't have clarity about what will actually bring us happiness. We're confused about what will actually bring us happiness. And judgment is one of those things that we're confused about. We think it will bring us happiness, and it just never will. So that's an error, a mistake. That's what I mean by an error. Okay, so then I asked the inner teacher, what do you recommend for us? And the inner teacher says, I recommend that you question your mind. When you feel it is hard to stay out of the pool or stay out of judgment, ask, who is this I that wants to remain wet? You will notice it isn't the I that loves the warmth of the sun. And you will also know that the warmth of the sun is your truest desire. And so the I that seeks warmth must be your true I. So, Inner Ramana is talking to those of us who are still confused about our identity. We still identify with the mind. We still identify with our mental ideas about what is happiness. And of course, we still identify with our judgments. And when we forget ourself and we're in that identity that is not our true self, what Inner Ramana's suggesting is that we question where our identification is placed. That if we see, oh, look, I'm identified with the mind again, and really what I am is the heart. If we see that, then we'll step back into being the heart again. We'll step back into ourself. Because again, it's pretty natural to be yourself. But when you're confused about who you are, you kind of stay focused, your attention stays focused in the mental judgment. So waking up to the fact that I am not this mental judgment, I am this heart, right? I am this heart. In just being the heart. Now I'm gonna tell you guys a story about why it was hard for me to let go of judgment, and then how it became easy. Why it was hard was because I really thought I was right about some of my judgments. I mean, some of my judgments I could see that I should let go of. You know, some of my judgments were petty judgments. And I could see that, you know, that I was wrong about them. They were just my point of view. Not everyone agreed, and I should just let it go. I could see that. but some of my judgments seem very, very right. And in fact, I could probably get nearly everyone, or at least a large group of people, to agree with me because, you know, they would also think the judgments are right. You know, one in particular that stands out was a man that I saw on the news who, you know, he's one of these people who murdered his children. I don't remember if he murdered his wife or not. He at least murdered his children. And I also don't remember if he killed himself or not, but he had these 2 5-year-old twin girls that he killed. You know, my mind is saying, you know, just to accept that is wrong because, you know, that needs to be judged. That is, you know, an inexcusable activity, and to just accept it is wrong. And, you know, the mind is telling us if we just accept things, you know, there's going to be absolute chaos. So that's what made letting go of judgment hard. It seemed that judgment was necessary in this world in order to maintain any sense of control. What made letting go of judgment become easy is when I started looking at judgment differently. When I started noticing, and you know, as we're being asked to do tonight, noticing how I felt when I judged. Not looking at, you know, I mean, how can I look at something out there with judgment and see to let go of judgment? I mean, I can't look at a man murdering his 5-year-old twin girls, see that as wrong, and also see how I should let go of judgment. I can't let go of judgment from within judgment. So I needed a new perspective. The new perspective was instead of looking at the man and thinking, is that a right or wrong behavior? Looking at myself and simply asking, how do I feel when I judge? And being honest. Honesty is really important. I have heard some people say, it feels really good to judge. I like to judge. And I think that needs to be looked at a little more closely. I mean, I do know that the ego feels swollen. It feels bigger. It feels more firm when I'm judging. Something in me swells. But is that really the same as feeling good, feeling at peace, that strong ego feeling? So as I started to look at truthfully what made me feel relaxed, at peace, blissful, happy, a true happiness, and what was causing some type of upset, I started noticing that I didn't want judgment. In fact, what I tell people now when they ask me how I came to let go of judgment to the degree that I have, I'm not going to claim that it's perfect, but if you were to look at it comparatively to how it used to be, there's a significant difference. How did I come to let go of judgment to the degree that I have? The answer is I came to see that judging was like hitting myself in the head with a hammer. And it ceased to make sense. Now, when you let go of judgment, does that mean then that everything is chaos? That the whole world goes to hell because you stopped your policing activities? As far as I can tell, the world did not change at all. The world is still the world. When I judged, men were killing their children. And now that I've let go, there are men killing their children. The difference is, I'm at peace. Now, is that peace at all worthwhile? Yes. What happens in my own personal life, again, my life does not intersect with the man killing his children. That was something I saw on the TV. But my life does intersect with my daughter, my roommate, my boyfriend, my friends. And what I find is that if I am able to stay in non-judgment, and I am able to stay in peace, I am able to be much more effective at resolving the things that come up that need to be resolved. In fact, when a situation does come up that does still hit my judgment and I feel upset, while upset, I do nothing. I just practice looking at my upset, being in acceptance of my upset, being in my heart with my upset, until the upset itself passes. I make decisions by listening to my intuition, and I can only hear my intuition clearly when I'm at peace. I can't hear it when I'm in judgment. So, like I said, the world is still the world. As far as I know, I wasn't controlling the world and making it a better world when I was judging. And you know what? It's not really a better world now that I'm not judging. There's been no change there. But there actually, I think, has been a change in my family life. I think that the people who live with me would tell you, if you ask them, that they benefit from my non-judgment. In fact, Danielle thanks me almost on a daily basis. Jasmine, not as often, but she does. She's totally aware of the non-judgment that she lives in. So maybe the outer world has not changed, but maybe the world, the part of the world that is closer to this body is different because I have chosen acceptance, chosen to live from the heart. And it's funny how we get stuck, you know, when we don't want to let go of judgment, the things we're usually stuck on are the things that our life doesn't intersect with, not really. Like my life, I have no control over the people on TV abusing animals. My life does not intersect there. So what good does it do for me to sit in my living room judging the people on the TV show who are abusing animals? All it does is upset me. It serves no useful purpose. Right? So the idea that I have to judge in order to keep the world, you know, in control is just a lie. The world's not in control. It spins out of control all of the time. But the environment directly around you will most likely change, and definitely the way you feel about the world and everything you experience will change if you choose to let go of judgment. So again, what makes it hard to let go of judgment? The belief that I'm right and I can control the world if I judge. And that's a lie. So it's a lie that's making it hard to let go of judgment. What makes it easy to let go of judgment? Just seeing that every time I judge, it's like sitting here hitting myself in the head with a hammer. Every time I judge, I upset myself. And that doesn't do anybody any good at all. So again, if we are still judging, it's because we still believe that literally our salvation lies in judgment. Maybe even the salvation of the world lies in judgment. And we need to see that's not true. And we see that by paying honest, close attention. Now, after Inner Ramana taught me that asking who is the I that wants to stay in judgment and noticing that that's not my true self, that I'm the heart and I don't want to stay in judgment, then I said to Inner Ramana, this is the same teaching I have been taught before. And what I was doing at that moment was I was remembering the true desire teachings in the Holy Spirit's interpretation of the New Testament, or NTI. And Inner Ramana said, there are no other teachings, but there is the realization that all teachings are the same and only one teaching is true. And I said, it's up to me, thinking he meant that I had a choice. And he said, and it is up to God. Both teachings are one. So what he was really saying to me here, again, very clearly, at least for me, was when I said, I have a choice, I actually slipped back into thinking of myself as the personality mind. And what he was reminding me of was simply, I am not the personality mind. I am something else, something beyond the personality mind. And as much as possible, I need to at least keep reminding myself of that, even if I don't have the experience of that yet. Because if I keep reminding myself, okay, I'm not this personality mind, and I keep choosing to detach from the personality mind's judgments and preferences and, you know, all of that, then at some point I will have the experience of my true self. So I can't make myself have the experience of my true self. I can't make my identity shift from the belief that I am this to the realization of what is true. But I can practice. I can remember, right? Remember, just it's a mental remembering, remind myself. And the more I do this, the more a detachment occurs. And that detachment lays the groundwork for the realization. So that's the end of that particular message. The next message is self-inquiry. And, you know, it's funny, we have 8 minutes left, but I don't really feel like starting a new message and then only getting halfway through it and having to quit. So what I'm going to do is just stop the teaching there. And I'm on the next hour anyway. So I suppose I can begin the transition whenever I want. So yeah, play a song. That was my thought. Play a song. I think what I'll play, hold on 1 second, let me grab it. It's a song. I've played this song for you guys before. It's by Peter McKenna. And it's a song about Ramana Maharshi. Let's see, the name of the song is Forever Here. So I'll play this song as our transition, and then when the song finishes, we can go ahead and begin the member meeting. And I have my recording running lens, so don't worry about it. Well, unless you want to record it as a backup, because, you know, sometimes things go wrong. You could record it as a backup. But if nothing goes wrong, I'll have a recording. Never any guarantees with anything, especially technology. Okay, let's see. That's song number 8 on the CD. All right, here we go.
Regarded highly by all, even worshipped as a messenger from above. He was simple, he was pure, he was silent and vast, he was an incarnation of love. Mountain was his friend and his beloved, his inspiration, his soul. He was one with the mountain, and so is he now. Oh, I am body was spent, it was dying, everyone knew. People around him were sad because they thought If his body is gone, he is gone too. But where do you think I am going? The mountain is my home always. Why do you believe I am leaving? Oh, I am forever here. Oh, I am forever here. Mountain is my home always. Why do you believe I am leaving? Oh, I am forever here. Oh, I am forever. You go and visit the mountain today, and you listen to the wind in the trees. Oh, now, if you look a little deeper into silence and embrace the moment with ease. Can you feel the presence? Can you sense the dreams? The silent treasure within. What never was born will never die. Oh, I am forever here. Oh, I am forever here. Oh, I am forever here. Oh, I am forever.
Right. As far as time goes, that was perfect. It is now the top of the hour.